but she lowered her lashes and looked up at him through them. "You're not so bad," she said. "If you want, I can say nice things to Maya about you."
"No thanks," said Jordan, who wasn't sure what Izzy's version of nice things was and feared finding out. "You know, it's normal, when you're going through a tough time, to want to be with the person you..." He was about to say love, realized she had never used the word, and switched gears. "Care about. But I don't think Simon knows you feel that way about him." Her lashes fluttered back up. "Does he ever say anything about me?"
"He thinks you're really strong," Jordan said, "and that you don't need him at all.
I think he feels superfluous in your life. Like, what can he give you when you're already perfect? Why would you want a guy like him?"
Jordan blinked. He hadn't meant to run on like that, and he wasn't sure how much of what he'd said applied to Simon, and how much to himself and Maya.
"So you mean I should tell him how I feel?" said Isabel in a small voice.
"Yes, definitely. Tell him how you feel."
"Okay."
She grabbed for the tequila bottle and took a swig. "I'll go over to Clary's right now, and I'll tell him." A small flower of alarm blossomed in his chest.
"You can't. It's practically 3 in the morning.
"If I wait, I'll lose my nerve," she said, in that reasonable tone that only very drunk people ever employed. She took another swig out of the bottle.
"I'll just go over there, and I'll knock on the window, and I'll tell him how I feel."
"Do you even know which window is Clary's?" She squinted.
"No."
The horrible vision of a drunk Isabel waking up Jocelyn and Luke floated through Jordan's head.
"Isabel?
No." He reached up to take the tequila bottle from her, and she jerked it away from him.
"I think I'm changing my mind about you," she said in a semi-threatening tone that would have been more frightening if she'd been able to focus her eyes on him directly. "I don't think I like you so much after all."
She stood up, looked down at her feet with a surprised expression, and fell over backward. Only Jordan's quick reflexes allowed him to catch her before she hit the floor. Chapter 7. A Sea Change. Clary was on her third cup of coffee at Tacky's when Simon finally walked in. He was in jeans, a red zip-up sweatshirt, why bother with wool coats when you didn't feel the cold, and engineer boots. People turned to look at him as he wove his way through the tables toward her. Simon had cleaned up nicely since Isabel had started getting on his case about his clothes, Clary thought as he headed toward her among the tables. There were flakes of snow caught in his dark hair, but where Alec's cheeks had been scarlet from the cold, Simon's remained colorless and pale. He slid into the booth across from her and looked at her, his dark eyes reflective and shining.
"You called?" he asked,
making his voice deep and resonant so that it sounded like Count Dracula.
"Technically, I texted."
She slid the menu across the table toward him, flipping it to the page for vampires. She'd glanced at it before, but the thought of blood pudding and blood milkshakes made her shudder.
"I hope I didn't wake you up."
"Oh, no," he said. "You wouldn't believe where I was." His voice trailed off as he saw the expression on her face. "Hey." His fingers were suddenly under her chin, lifting her head. The laughter was gone from his eyes, replaced by concern. "What happened? Is there more news about Jace?"
"Do you know what you want?"
It was Kaylee, the blue-eyed fairy waitress who had given Clary the Queen's Bell. She looked at Clary now and grinned, a superior grin that made Clary grit her teeth. Clary ordered a piece of apple pie. Simon ordered a mix of hot chocolate and blood. Kaylee took the menus away, and Simon looked at Clary with concern. She took a deep breath and told him about the night, every gritty detail, Jace's appearance, what he had said to her, the confrontation in the living room, and what had happened to Luke. She told him what Magnus had said about dimensional pockets and other worlds, and how there was no way to track someone hidden in a dimensional pocket
or get a message through to them. Simon's eyes grew darker as she spoke, and by the end of the story, he had his head in his hands.
Simon?
Kaylee had come and gone, leaving their food, which was untouched. Clary touched his shoulder.
What is it? Is it Luke?
It's my fault. He looked up at her, eyes dry. Vampires cried tears mixed with blood, she thought. She had read that somewhere.
If I hadn't bitten Sebastian.
You did it for me, so I'd live. Her voice was gentle.
You saved my life.
You've saved mine 6 or 7 times. It seemed fair. His voice cracked. She recalled him retching up Sebastian's black blood on his knees in the roof garden.
Assigning blame doesn't get us anywhere, Clary said.
And this isn't why I dragged you here, just to tell you what happened. I mean, I would have told you anyway, but I would have waited for tomorrow if it weren't that.
He looked at her warily and took a sip from his mug.
Weren't that what?
I have a plan.
He groaned.
I was afraid of that.
My plans are not terrible.
Isabel's plans are terrible.
He pointed a finger at her.
Your plans are suicidal at best.
She sat back, her arms crossed over her chest.
Do you want to hear it or not? You have to keep it a secret.
I would pluck out my own eyes with a fork before I would give away your secrets, Simon said, then looked anxious.
Wait a second. Do you think that's likely to be required?
I don't know. Clary covered her face with her hands.
Just tell me. He sounded resigned.
With a sigh, she reached into her pocket and drew out a small velvet bag, which she upended on the table. 2 golden rings fell out, landing with a soft clink.
Simon looked at them, puzzled.
You want to get married?
Don't be an idiot.
She leaned forward, dropping her voice.
Simon, these are the rings, the ones the Sealy Queen wanted.
I thought you said you never got them. He broke off, raising his eyes to her face.
I lied. I did take them. But after I saw Jace in the library, I didn't want to give them to the Queen anymore. I had a feeling we might need them sometime, and I realized she was never going to give us any useful information. The rings seemed more valuable than another round with the Queen.
Simon caught them up in his hand, hiding them from sight as Kaylee passed by.
Clary, you can't just take things the Sealy Queen wants and keep them for yourself. She's a very dangerous enemy to have.
She looked at him pleadingly.
Can we at least see if they work?
He sighed and handed her one of the rings. It felt light, but was as soft as real gold. She worried for a moment that it wouldn't fit, but as soon as she slipped it onto her right index finger, it seemed to mold the shape of her finger until it sat perfectly in the place below her knuckle. She saw Simon glancing down at his right hand and realized the same thing had happened to him.
Now we talk, I guess, he said. Say something to me, you know, mentally.
Clary turned to Simon, feeling absurdly as if she were being asked to perform in a play whose lines she hadn't memorized.
Simon.
Simon blinked.
I think, could you do that again?
This time Clary concentrated, trying to focus her mind on Simon. The Simon-ness of him, the shape of the way he thought, the feeling of hearing his voice. The sense of him close, his whispers, his secrets, the way he made her laugh.
So, she thought conversationally, now that I'm in your mind, want to see some naked mental pictures of Jace?
Simon jumped.
I heard that, and no.
Excitement fizzed in Clary's veins.
It was working. Think something back to me.
It took less than a second. She heard Simon, the way she heard Brother Zachariah, a voice without sound inside her mind.
You've seen him naked?
Well, not entirely, but I...
Enough,
he said out loud. And though his voice was caught between amusement and anxiety, His eyes sparked. They work. Holy crap, they really work. She leaned forward. So can I tell you my idea? He touched the ring on his finger, feeling its delicate tracery, the leaf veins carved under his fingertips. Sure. She began to explain, but she hadn't yet reached the end of her description when Simon interrupted, out loud this time. No, absolutely not. Simon, she said, it's a perfectly fine plan. The plan where you follow Jace and Sebastian off to some unknown dimensional pocket, and we use these rings to communicate so those of us over here in the regular dimension of Earth can track you down? That plan? Yes. No, he said. No, it isn't. Clary sat back. You don't just get to say no. This plan involves me. I get to say no. No. Simon! Simon patted the seat beside him as if someone were sitting there. Let me introduce you to my good friend, No. Maybe we can compromise, she suggested, taking a bite of pie. No. Simon! No is a magical word, he told her. Here's how it goes. You say, Simon, I have an insane suicidal plan. Would you like to help me carry it out? And I say, why, no. I'll do it anyway, she said. He stared at her across the table. What? I'll do it whether you help me or not, she said. If I can't use the rings, I'll still follow Jace to wherever he is and try to get word back to you guys by sneaking away, finding telephones, whatever. If it's possible, I'm going to do it, Simon. I just have a better chance of surviving if you help me. And there's no risk to you. I don't care about risk to me, he hissed, leaning forward across the table. I care about what happens to you. Damn it, I'm practically indestructible. Let me go. You stay behind. Yes, Clary said. Jace won't find that odd at all. You can just tell him you've always been secretly in love with him and you can't stand being parted. I could tell him I've given it thought and I completely agree with his and Sebastian's philosophy and decided to throw in my lot with theirs. You don't even know what their philosophy is. There is that. I might have better luck telling him I'm in love with him. Jace thinks everyone's in love with him anyway. But I, said Clary, actually am. Simon looked at her for a long time over the table, silently. You're serious, he said finally. You'd actually do this, without me, without any safety net. There isn't anything I wouldn't do for Jace. Simon leaned his head back against the plastic booth seat. The mark of Cain glowed a gentle silver against his skin. Don't say that, he said. Wouldn't you do anything for the people you love? I'd do almost anything for you, Simon said quietly. I'd die for you. You know that. But would I kill someone else? Someone innocent? What about a lot of innocent lives? What about the whole world? Is it really love to tell someone that if it came down to picking between them and every other life on the planet, you'd pick them? Is that, I don't know, is that a moral sort of love at all? Love isn't moral or immoral, said Clary. It just is. I know, Simon said. But the actions we take in the name of love, those are moral or immoral. And normally it wouldn't matter. Normally, whatever I think of Jace being annoying, he'd never ask you to do anything that went against your nature. Not for him. Not for anyone. But he isn't exactly Jace anymore, is he? And I just don't know, Clary. I don't know what he might ask you to do. Clary leaned her elbow on the table, suddenly very tired. Maybe he isn't Jace, but he's the closest thing to Jace I've got. There's no way back to Jace without him. She raised her eyes to Simon's. Are you telling me it's hopeless? There was a long silence. Clary could see Simon's innate honesty warring with his desire to protect his best friend. Finally, he said, I'd never say that. I'm still Jewish, you know, even if I am a vampire. In my heart, I remember and believe. Even the words I can't say. God. He choked and swallowed. He made a covenant with us. Just like the Shadow Hunters believe Raziel made a covenant with them. And we believe in his promises. Therefore, you can never lose hope. Hatikva. Because if you keep hope alive, it will keep you alive. He looked faintly embarrassed. My rabbi used to say that. Clary slid her hand across the table and laid it atop Simon's. He rarely talked about his religion with her, or anyone, though she knew he believed. Does that mean you agree? He groaned. I think it means you crushed my spirit and beat me down. Fantastic. Of course, you realize you're leaving me in the position of being the one to tell everyone. Your mother, Luke, Alec, Izzy, Magnus. I guess I shouldn't have said there would be no risk to you, Clary said meekly. That's right, said Simon. Just remember, when your mother's gnawing my ankle like a furious mama bear separated from her cub, I did it for you. Jordan had only just fallen back asleep when the banging on the front door came again. He rolled over and groaned. The clock by the bed said 4 a.m. in blinking yellow numbers. More banging. Jordan rolled reluctantly to his feet, dragged on his jeans, and staggered out into the hallway. Blearily, he jerked the door open. Look. The words died on his lips. Standing in the hallway was Maya. She was wearing jeans and a caramel-colored leather jacket, and her hair was pulled up behind her head with bronze chopsticks. A single loose curl fell against her temple. Jordan's fingers itched to reach out and tuck it behind her ear. Instead, he jammed his hands into the pockets of his jeans. Nice shirt, she said with a dry glance at his bare chest. There was a backpack slung over one of her shoulders. For a moment, his heart jumped. Was she leaving town? Was she leaving town to get away from him? Look, Jordan. Who is it? The voice behind Jordan was husky, as rumpled as the bed she'd probably just climbed out of. He saw Maya's mouth drop open, and he looked back over his shoulder to see Isabel, wearing only one of Simon's t-shirts, standing behind him and rubbing at her eyes. Maya's mouth snapped shut. It's me, she said, in a not particularly friendly tone. Are you visiting Simon? What? No, Simon's not here. Shut up, Isabel. Jordan thought frantically. She gestured vaguely. Out. Maya's cheeks reddened. It smells like a bar in here. Jordan's cheap tequila, said Isabel with a wave of her hand. You know. Is that his shirt, too? Maya inquired. Isabel glanced down at herself, and then back up at Maya. Belatedly, she seemed to realize what the other girl was thinking. Oh, no, Maya. So first Simon cheated on me with you, and now you and Jordan. Simon, Isabel said, also cheated on me with you. Anyway, nothing's going on with me and Jordan. I came over to see Simon, but he wasn't here, so I decided to crash in his room. And I'm going back in there now. No, Maya said sharply, don't. Forget about Simon and Jordan. What I have to say, it's something you need to hear, too. Isabel froze, one hand on Simon's door, her sleep-flushed face slowly paling. Jace, she said, is that why you're here? Maya nodded. Isabel sagged against the door. Is he? Her voice cracked. She started again. Have they found? He came back, said Maya. For Clary. She paused. He had Sebastian with him. There was a fight, and Luke was injured. He's dying. Isabel made a dry little sound in her throat. Jace? Jace hurt Luke? Maya avoided her eyes. I don't know what happened exactly. Only that Jace and Sebastian came for Clary, and there was a fight. Luke was hurt. Clary is all right. She's at Magnus's with her mother.
Maya turned to Jordan. Magnus called me and asked me to come and see you.
He tried to reach you, but he couldn't.
He wants you to put him in touch with the preacher Lupus.
Put him in touch with?
Jordan shook his head.
You can't just call the preacher.
It's not like 1-800-WERE-WOLF.
Maya crossed her arms.
Well, how do you reach them, then?
I have a supervisor. He reaches me when he wants to.
Or I can call him in an emergency.
This is an emergency.
Maya hooked her thumbs through the belt loops on her jeans.
Luke could die, and Magnus says the preacher might have information that could help.
She looked at Jordan, her eyes big and dark.
He ought to tell her, he thought,
that the preacher didn't like getting mixed up in the affairs of the Clave, that they kept to themselves and their mission, to help new downworlders, that there was no guarantee they would agree to help, and every likelihood that they would resent the request.
But Maya was asking him.
This was something he could do for her that might be a step down the long road of making it up to her for what he'd done before.
Okay, he said. Then we go to their headquarters and present ourselves in person. They're out on the North Fork of Long Island, pretty far from anywhere.
We could take my truck.
Fine. I thought we might have to go somewhere. That's why I brought my stuff.
Maya?
It was Isabel. She hadn't said anything in so long that Jordan had almost forgotten she was there. He turned and saw her leaning against the wall by Simon's door. She was hugging herself as if she were cold.
Is he all right?
Maya winced.
Luke?
No, he...
Jace!
Isabel's voice was an indrawn breath.
Is Jace all right? Did they hurt him? Or catch him? Or...
He's fine, Maya said flatly. And he's gone. He disappeared with Sebastian.
And Simon?
Isabel's gaze flicked to Jordan.
You said he was with Clary.
Maya shook her head. He wasn't. He wasn't there. Her hand was tight on the strap of her backpack.
But there's one thing we know now, and you're not going to like it.
Jace and Sebastian are connected somehow. Hurt Jace, you hurt Sebastian. Kill him, and Sebastian dies, and vice versa. Straight from Magnus.
Does the Clave know?
Isabel demanded instantly.
They didn't tell the Clave, did they?
Maya shook her head. Not yet.
They'll find out, said Isabel. The whole pack knows. Someone will tell. Then it'll be a manhunt. They'll kill him just to kill Sebastian. They'll kill him anyway.
She reached up and pushed her hands through her thick black hair.
I want my brother, she said. I want to see Alec.
Well, that's good, Maya said. Because after Magnus called me, he sent a follow-up text. He said he had a feeling you'd be here, and he had a message for you. He wants you to go to his apartment in Brooklyn, right away. It was freezing out. So cold that even the thermos rune she put on herself and the thin parka she'd swiped from Simon's closet weren't doing much to keep Isabel from shivering as she pushed open the door of Magnus's apartment building and ducked inside. After being buzzed up, she headed up the stairs, trailing her hand along the splintering banister. Part of her wanted to rush up the steps, knowing Alec was there and would understand what she was feeling. The other part of her, the part that had hidden her parents' secret from her brothers all her life, wanted to curl up on the landing and be alone with her misery. The part that hated relying on anyone else, because wouldn't they just let you down? And was proud to say that Isabel Lightwood didn't need anyone, reminded herself that she was here because they had asked for her. They needed her. Isabel didn't mind being needed. Liked it, in fact. It was why it had taken her so long to warm up to Jace when he had first stepped through the portal from Idris. A thin 10-year-old boy with haunted pale gold eyes. Alec had been delighted with him immediately. But Isabel had resented his self-possession. When her mother had told her that Jace's father had been murdered in front of him, she'd imagined him coming to her tearfully, for comfort and even advice. But he hadn't seemed to need anyone. Even at 10 years old, he'd had a sharp, defensive wit and an acidic temperament. In fact, Isabel had thought, dismayed, that he was just like her. In the end, it was shadow hunting that they had bonded over, a shared love of sharp-edged weapons, gleaming serif blades, the painful pleasure of burning marks, the thought-numbing swiftness of battle. When Alec had wanted to go out hunting alone with Jace, leaving Izzy behind, Jace had spoken up for her. "We need her with us. She's the best there is. Aside from me, of course." She had loved him just for that. She was at the front door of Magnus's apartment now. Light poured through the crack under the door, and she heard murmuring voices. She pushed the door open, and a wave of warmth enveloped her. She stepped gratefully forward. The warmth came from a fire leaping in the grated fireplace, though there were no chimneys in the building, and the fire had the blue-green tinge of enchanted flame. Magnus and Alec sat on one of the couches grouped near the fireplace. As she came in, Alec looked up and saw her, and sprang to his feet, hurrying barefoot across the room. He was wearing black sweatpants and a white t-shirt with a torn collar, to put his arms around her. For a moment, she stood still in the circle of his arms, hearing his heartbeat, his hands patting half-awkwardly up and down her back, her hair. "Is," he said. "It's going to be okay, Izzy." She pushed away from him, wiping at her eyes. God, she hated crying. "How can you say that?" she snapped. "How can anything possibly be okay after this?" "Izzy." Alec drew his sister's hair over one shoulder and tugged gently at it. It reminded her of the years when she used to wear her hair in braids, and Alec would yank on them with considerably less gentleness than he was showing now. "Don't go to pieces. We need you." He dropped his voice. "Also, do you know you smell like tequila?" She looked over at Magnus, who was watching them from the sofa with his unreadable cat's eyes. "Where's Clary?" she said. "And her mother. I thought they were here." "Asleep," said Alec. "We thought they needed a rest."
"And I don't."
"Did you just see your fiancé or your stepfather nearly murdered in front of your eyes?" Magnus inquired dryly. He was wearing striped pajamas with a black silk dressing gown thrown over them. "Isabel Lightwood," he said, sitting up and loosely clasping his hands in front of him. "As Alec said, we need you." Isabel straightened up, putting her shoulders back. "Need me for what?" "To go to the Iron Sisters," said Alec. "We need a weapon that will divide Jace and Sebastian so that they can be hurt separately. Well, you know what I mean. So Sebastian can be killed without hurting Jace. And it's a matter of time before the Clave knows that Jace isn't Sebastian's prisoner, that he's working with him." "It's not Jace," Isabel protested.
"It may not be Jace," said Magnus, "but if he dies, your Jace dies right along with him."
"As you know, the Iron Sisters will speak only to women," said Alec, "and Jocelyn can't go alone because she isn't a shadow hunter anymore."
"What about Clary?"
"She's still in training. She won't know the right questions to ask, or the way to address them. But you and Jocelyn will. And Jocelyn says she's been there before. She can help guide you once we portal you to the edge of the wards around the Adamant Citadel. You'll be going, both of you, in the morning." Isabel considered it. The idea of finally having something to do, something definite and active and important, was a relief. She would prefer a task that had something to do with killing demons or chopping off Sebastian's legs, but this was better than nothing. The legends surrounding the Adamant Citadel made it sound like a forbidding, distant place, and the Iron Sisters were seen far more rarely than the Silent Brothers. Isabel had never met one.
"When do we leave?" she said. Alec smiled for the first time since she'd arrived, and reached to ruffle her hair.
"That's my Isabel."
"Quit it."
She ducked out from his reach and saw Magnus grinning at them from the sofa. He levered himself up and ran a hand through his already explosively spiky black hair.
I've got 3 spare rooms, he said. Clary's in one, her mother's in the other. I'll show you.